Welcome to the PS Insights podcast series sponsored by Kimball Applications. Professional services organizations strive for efficiency, success, and growth. This series is intended to provide key insights on how to achieve this from industry leaders.
My name is Ian Murphy, and today I'm talking to Chris DeBrusque about the challenges of financial reporting for the business and financial reporting on business operations. Chris has been in the consulting industry for over 25 years, working in a number of small and big firms and small companies who became big companies in senior leadership roles, both client-facing and operational. He is currently a partner with Oliver Wyman, a global management consulting firm.
I'm currently a partner with Oliver Wyman, but I've had the pleasure of joining a number of smaller consulting firms that grew into big consulting firms and also starting two of my own over the last several years. So I've sat in a number of operational roles and had the challenge of how do you monitor the business while also doing the work.
You often talk about the problem of professional service organizations running their business in the rearview mirror. Can you explain what that means?
One of the challenges with the consulting business specifically, and most professional services business, is that getting forward-looking visibility is quite hard. It's hard to understand what deals will close and when they'll close. It's hard to get a good feel for your future resource requirements. There's a lot of pipeline turns over the course of the year, and you refresh your pipeline a number of times in most of these businesses. So predictability is a key challenge. What that means is that most firms start looking in the rearview mirror and only looking at past data, and usually data that's quite delayed, data that they're getting after they do their month-end close or their quarter-end close, and that really isn't effective in managing the business. So in the business, in those circumstances, you end up with a lot of surprises. Revenue that doesn't quite meet, extra people on the bench that you didn't plan, deals that disappear out of your pipeline at a moment's notice that you didn't expect. In order to actively manage the business, you've got to start looking forward, which means getting access to the information and thinking about it in a way that can be predictive and give you insight into what's likely to happen a month in the future, a quarter in the future, 6 months in the future.
How do companies change the way they do reporting in order to get that forward-looking information?
There's a number of things you can do. First of all, you have to get good up-to-date data on what's going on in your resources and how you're deploying them and how they're billing. More importantly, though, you have to have good predictability in what's going to happen in the future. If you have a contract that's 6 months and you have a team that's working on it, you need a way of loading that team into your systems so that you can predict what kind of revenue that team's going to drive. So that's one way to do it, is just simply get your resource plans out into the future. Another is to integrate in risk and delivery risk into the way you look at your data moving forward. If you're measuring risk on a project and that project risk is climbing, there's a fairly good chance it's either going to slip or you're going to have to deploy new resources to it. Including that in a risk-adjusted view going forward also helps you predict your cost and your revenue.
Where do companies find people capable of calculating, assessing, and actually putting real numbers on those risks?
Consulting, when you look at it, a lot of it is project-related programs. So you've got a commitment to a client to deliver a set of deliverables, a set of impact at some point in the future. Any good project manager understands how to evaluate and measure the risk of their delivery. They know when they're not on track on their project plan. They know when they're starting to see issues in the metrics that they're monitoring on their project. They know these things. The problem is when you get a consulting firm at scale, all that information is lost, and as a senior executive sitting on the top, you don't have any visibility to it. You can infer it out of certain things. One of my favorite metrics that I used to always watch very closely when I was running businesses was the difference between the sold as margin versus the current margin. If you actually store and track your predicted sold as margin, the amount of cost and the amount of revenue you're going to drive out of a program, and then you watch it over time, what happens is you start to see additional resources being added, additional expenses, non-billable expenses being added, those types of things that start to drop the effective margin of that project. One of the organizations that I ran, we had a report that showed us any project that was more than 3% off its predicted margin or starting margin was something that we put on a red flag report and we started looking at. You can create those kind of metrics that when you're looking at hundreds or many hundreds of projects or even thousands of projects, the ones that you need to pay attention to pop to the top.
Where do companies start looking to build those metrics? Is there a set of guidelines across the industry? Or do they have to build those per project or per business?
I've never seen, in all the books on how to run a consulting or professional services firm, I've never seen anybody actually get practical on the series of metrics that you need in order to measure the effectiveness of the firm. That being said, I think there are organizations out there that have done a pretty good job. The one that I just talked about is a great metric that some people pay attention to. Daily project rate, or the amount of money that you're making on average per resource per project, is another one. There's these types of metrics that you just kind of think about. And one of the most interesting things we did in one of the firms I worked for was we started predicting future revenue based on past revenue. We had a graph that showed for that month, for that quarter, over the last 4 years, at what point in the month did we hit our pipeline projections, and how were we tracking against our pipeline and our revenue projections. Then we started measuring current performance month to month, forward-looking pipeline against historical, which is really interesting because in this business you get a lot of cyclical things. There's typically a reduction in revenue over the course of the summer. Fewer projects start. You lose billing days around Thanksgiving in the United States, around the holidays at the end of the year, and certain other times of the year. By running these forward-looking predictions based on historical trend, but also on the pipeline, you can get a real good feel, are we ahead or behind our historical performance for revenue in that particular month. If you have the data and you sit down and you think about what are the questions I have about my business, you can often very quickly come up with a metric that you can measure and then apply that metric across a range of projects and understand how you're performing as a company.
Is there a risk of getting too bogged down in the metrics?
More information is always better. You could manage simply by the metrics and not spend any time talking to your teams. But in the end, things like margin degradation or margin erosion, expense increase, utilization numbers dropping off are critical. The firms that I've worked for where we've installed a high-end professional services automation platform, it's been Kimball twice for me, we had two things that we almost discovered immediately, and this is, I think, fascinating. The first was that we were leaving revenue on the table. There was revenue that we could have billed to clients under our contracts and under our relationships that we were not billing for various reasons, but we couldn't even understand what that quantity was. And when we discovered what it was, we could dig in and understand, well, we're doing this for good reasons, or are we doing this for no reason that we can establish? So we were able to recapture missed revenue. That was one thing. The other thing that we immediately spotted was utilization, people hiding utilization. In large professional services organizations, it's relatively easy for somebody to hide people. And those people typically aren't generating revenue, but they're adding some value to somebody's project or somebody's account. There's lots of project codes and other places you can plant them. When you start digging into that data and starting to think about it more holistically at the project and the account level, you discover all these people are hiding. Some of those people are hiding for completely valid reasons, and it's just a matter of rebooking the cost. But in some cases, people are hiding because they aren't very good. They can't get themselves billable, or they don't really want to work very hard anymore. And those are the kind of people you need to highlight, and then you need to decide what to do with them.
Do you have any historical feel for how much money companies end up leaving on the table?
Every consulting firm I've worked for at scale, not the small ones because it's much easier to manage, but the big ones, millions of dollars. When you actually dig in and analyze and look, it's millions of dollars or tens of millions in a couple of cases that we found when we actually started looking at the amount of money we were basically giving to clients. The client didn't expect it. It wasn't like we had a conversation and said, we're going to give you the following resources for free. It's just the inefficiency in the process just wasn't there. Another area of leakage that I've seen in one firm, which I won't name, but it was a bit of a surprise. We found in one audit, when we dug into it and looked at the data, well over $100,000 in unbilled expenses. So another thing that happens in consulting firms is billing through expenses can be uncomfortable sometimes for project leads and account leads because clients push back on them. It's an area that they can dig into. So in many cases, they will flip expenses to non-billable status and remove them from the invoice. Sometimes there's valid reasons for doing that. If a team goes out and spends more than they're supposed to on a dinner under the client's policy, that may be perfectly valid and allowed, but you want to know that. You don't want it just to be flipped to non-billable status so the client doesn't push back on it. There's just a lot of money that doesn't flow. The other thing that we've seen, the breakage in the process, is expenses that don't get billed in time to actually be paid. So the project will finish, client will pay the last invoice, close off the PO, and be done with it. And then several months later, suddenly these expenses, these flights and these meals pop up. And when you try and generate an invoice, the client very properly says, I'm sorry, this PO is closed. There's no more money here. We've done it. We're finished. Most firms at that point will end up writing that off. And every firm I've worked for, I've seen that happen. These are the kind of things that just with really solid processes, very quick turnaround on delivery of invoice to client, those types of things you can eliminate. But you can't do that without a system that supports it and the corresponding metrics to track what you're not doing.
How does that align to the sales cycle? Are there ways to better align both sides, the delivery and the sales side?
There are account managers who are very good at setting expectations with a client as to the financials of the project. Not only the delivery of the value as a result of the project, but the actual financials. So there's no surprises. The key with the client is always don't surprise them and adhere to whatever agreements or policies or other procedures that they've asked you to adhere to. If you do all that, you're typically safe, and there's strong alignment between the client and the firm. It's where you maybe sell things in a way that you haven't been totally transparent as to the true cost. And a classic would be the client is expecting you to have a local team assigned to their project, and while there's an expenses clause in the contract, no one set the expectation that a significant number of the people on the project are going to be traveling in every week. So they get a really big expenses bill and are confused as to why that happened. A lot of it is expectation management. Some teams are excellent at it and other teams are not. When you sit on top of a large organization, and you have lots of different levels of delivery skill and account management skill across your teams. Your goal is to spot those things and go in and help the team. If you start to see there's an issue, you can step in and remediate with all kinds of different things. But if you don't see it, or you don't see it until it's too late, then it's just frustrating because then you're just flushing money.
How does that impact resourcing? Is there a risk that you don't bill back that resources because you're worried about how the client will perceive it?
It depends on the contractual structure. There's two challenges with that. One is, if you're in a time and materials contractual structure for a project, even though you may contractually be able to bill the resources that you add to a project if it goes off the rails or is getting in trouble, the client may not be accepting of that. They may push back. So you have to have visibility of that. I had one situation a number of years ago where the client came and asked us for a huge scope increase, which we agreed that we would do. We deployed the resources to do it. But the documentation that went into that agreement wasn't particularly solid, and we never really agreed to what degree would we invest in achieving that scope. The value for money was never really figured out. As a result, when we sent the invoice for the excess work, we got pushed back, and we ended up having to do a negotiation about discounting the fees and a number of other things. So again, it's all about transparency. The problem that I've experienced when you run these organizations is it's easy to be transparent and to have that transparency when you have 6 project teams. Beyond 6, you kind of lose track. When you've got 50 or 100 or 200 project teams running, it's absolutely impossible to have any transparency into what they're doing. In fact, in many cases, you don't even know what they're doing. They're just a number on a spreadsheet to you, producing a certain revenue each month. As much as you can surface the visibility and use metrics to do that, allows you to understand where to focus. If you can only focus on 6 to 10 things in any particular time, at least from a client delivery perspective, it's which ones. You would figure that out based on where are the potential risks or where's the opportunity.
How do we take all this and put this into the prediction side of the business?
The revenue prediction we sort of talked about a little bit. Having really strong pipeline management processes supported by data is probably the only way you can do that. Salespeople across the board are horrendous at managing pipelines. They don't like it, and if the tool set doesn't make it easy for them, they definitely don't do it. But even then, they are always optimistic by definition. You can't be a salesperson without being an optimist. They will keep something in the pipeline at a high percentage point until they're 100% sure that it's not going to happen, and then they'll pull it on you. You can see a lot of things dropping out of your pipelines. Building really strong processes and a culture around pipeline management and being open and honest about the actual probability of work happening is really critical. And then backing it up with a corresponding system that allows you to track it. People, process, and the technology is super critical. On the resourcing side, it's just a matter of being diligent in keeping your forward-looking projections in place. There's two things that happen. One is a project team might know that they're going to need more resources at a certain point, but they don't project it, so it's a surprise. They need it at the last minute, and that's often really hard. If you have visibility into resource needs, then it's easy to fulfill them. If you don't, then you can get caught short or cut without the right people. The other thing that happens is that you'll end up with renewal fall-off. It will look like you have a huge bench 3 months or 4 months or 6 months out because you're not properly tracking renewals, when in fact the account teams or the project teams, they know for sure, or fairly for sure, that project's going to extend. And those resources are going to continue to work on the next phase of the program or the extension of the program. Look, having a really strong discipline about renewals and understanding not only that we need a team of 6 to continue, but we need this team of 6 with these people to continue. The flip side is being really, really good at managing, well, who is going to roll off when? And when are we going to have new resources available for new work or for sales efforts or other types of things? In some organizations, resources are fungible. You get 10,000 developers spread around the world. To a large degree, they're fungible. You know, a Java programmer is a Java programmer is a Java programmer for the most part. But there's a lot of resources in this business who are not fungible. They're experts in specific areas, and you need them. So again, separating out your forward-looking resource requirements into fungible and non-fungible resources is also really critical. And you can't do that unless you have good visibility into when people are going to be available, which comes down to needing some sort of a system to manage all that.
How much of this is technology that the business must invest in advance, and how much of this is purely and simply just about how the business functions in terms of process?
It's a bit chicken and egg. You can't institute processes that are rigorous and aligned to the business need without the technology. But if you put the technology in without also looking at the people and organizational and process aspects of it, you've wasted your investment. You're not going to get any value out of it. You have to look at it holistically. Having been through a couple of transformations where we took a hodgepodge of IT systems and revenue management systems and replaced it with a single holistic platform, 20 or 30% of our effort was in figuring out how to configure the technology to do what we wanted. Upwards of 70% was changing people's behavior in order to leverage the platforms. Classic problem was, how do you get people to put in time cards weekly on time? If time cards are due every Monday morning for the past week, How do you ensure that by Monday at noon, everybody's got them in, and then by Tuesday, all the managers have approved them, and you can move into actually calculating your weekly P&L and your forward projections? Huge issue. But that's a people problem, and that's a carrot and stick problem. Do you push back on them when they don't do it, or do you entice them to do it through some sort of a contest or a benefit? And often in cases, you have to do both. It's a great example where you have to invest in the people and the process and the organizational aspects in order to leverage the technology. Because if you have the most amazing platform that tracks all your P&L down to the letter, across all your projects, right down to the person, but they don't put their time cards in, then the data's wrong. Then you're managing the business based on metrics that don't actually work.
If I was to ask you for a tick list of things that companies could start to look at to see how good or how bad they are at the moment, what would you suggest?
When I look at an organization, in some cases in my current role, we end up doing due diligence for investors on organizations. In some cases, those are professional services firms. The things I look for, first of all, how many surprises exist in the forward-looking your revenue projections? Are they fairly stable and predictable? Do they change in controlled ways? Or does the pipeline jerk around and have a lot of volatility into it? In some cases, that's valid because the business has volatility. But most cases, it's not. It means that it's bad processes. Another metric or another tick list is hunt down utilization leakage. People who should be billing and the invoices should be flowing out, the revenue should be flowing in, but aren't. So utilization breakage. Pipeline turns and pipeline quality. If something gets to 75% in a pipeline, it occasionally drops out. But it shouldn't. You shouldn't see 60 or 70% of the deals that get to 75% not actually close. If you start to see those metrics, it's important. From a tick list perspective, think through the metrics that you need to run the business, and there's a range of them, and they all are cost and revenue and expense management. Figure out what data you need to capture to do that. It's probably just a few data points that just need to be rigorously captured. Think about the people and process aspects of capturing that information and how you should go about doing it and enticing your organization to give you what you need. Then how to use the information. One of the challenges I've seen with putting in revenue management systems and professional service automation systems is people end up creating 300 reports. No human being is going to look at 300 reports. Identify the six that you're going to look at every day, design those correctly, and implement them and make sure that you do look at them every day. In my last role where I was running quite a large organization, I had a set of reports that I looked at every morning over my coffee. And it was just a regular thing. Every morning I sat down. Those were the reports I pulled up. There wasn't very many. But they were a couple of key things that I wanted to watch from a business perspective. And that was how I ran the business.
Chris, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure.
You have been listening to one of a series of podcasts dedicated to sharing best practices for professional services organizations. These can be found on www.kimballapps.com.